And with that, we'll move to item number 20, Lake Oahe Fishery Update.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the Commission, Secretary Roebling. While Chris gets this pulled up, my name is Dylan Bavenhoff, fisheries biologist for the department, just across town here out of the Fort Pierre District Office. I'm going to change gears here a little bit from yesterday and this morning, away from big game and disease and licenses, and talk about, I think, the only fisheries-related agenda item this month, so I'll try to do it justice. But I'll be talking briefly about just kind of what we've been seeing the last year or so on Lake Oahe, right here just north of town, one of the most recreationally important fisheries for the state. Just for the sake of time today, it'll be a little bit of an abbreviated version. We'll kind of focus mostly on just what we're seeing walleye-wise on Lake Oahe. We'll talk about some of the stockings that we've been doing the last handful of years and into next year. And then I'll just have a couple quick slides on some prey fish abundance, because of how that relates to obviously like the sport fisheries, and then a little bit of what we saw as far as angling pressure this last year. But just to put this out there, this will be abbreviated version, but next week, Wednesday at 7 p.m., myself and some of my colleagues will be hosting a public meeting just across the river at the Fort Pierre American, where we'll be providing a much more in-depth discussion and presentation on both Oahe and Lake Sharp. We'll have a lot more information in there that I'm able to provide today. So if any of the folks in the room or online are interested, that'll be next week, Wednesday in Fort Pierre, and we'll also be recording all those presentations and posting them on our department YouTube page so that anyone can view those if they're not in the Pierre, Fort Pierre area. So before I get into the data, I think it's important to hear me talk a lot about Upper Oahe and Lower Oahe. So when we look at Lake Oahe, it is a monster of a reservoir. It's a very, very large system, which can provide some challenges as far as fish management on a reservoir this size. So when we talk about management, we actually break Lake Oahe down into two management zones, at upper end and lower end. And it actually works very well for us, because although it is the same system, those two ends of Oahe actually function very separately from one another, almost as two distinct fisheries. That the upper end of Lake Oahe is generally shallower, a little muddier. It has some of those major tributaries, the Grand River, Moreau River. So it's generally a little warmer, a little more turbid. And then the lower end, obviously a lot deeper, a lot cleaner, cooler water down by the dam. Less tributaries, so less flow coming in. And as a result of some of those different characteristics, the walleye fisheries kind of function differently from each other in those two areas. So it allows us a unique opportunity to kind of manage them individually. So these next few graphs will be focused, again, on that lower end of Lake Oahe. And I should mention from the last slide, the cutoff between upper and lower is the Highway 212 bridge, just west of Gettysburg there by Whitlock Bay. So when we talk about Lower Oahe, that's anything from the 212 bridge down to Oahe Dam. So this graph here is just looking at the results from our September gillnet survey. So during the month of September, we have, I think, a 9-man crew go out, and it takes us about 2.5, maybe 3 weeks to run the survey. So it's a pretty intensive survey, especially dealing with weather and that type of stuff on the big lake. But over that course of time, we run 216 gill nets in random locations across the state, collect all those fish, and we get a lot of information on a bunch of different species. But just for, like I said, for the sake of time today, we'll just look at walleye. But this graph here is just basically looking at, so the y-axis up and down is basically just looking at the average number of walleyes that we catch per net. So when we pool all those nets and take an average across them. And then we have years running on the x-axis from left to right, going back to 2017, to this last year, 2025 on the far right. So you can see, it a very positive trend in this data. It's similar to the last few years. We're getting the highest abundance of walleyes that we've seen on the lower end of Oahe in the last 8 or 9 years or so. And it always goes up and down a little bit, a little variable, but you see a pretty strong increasing trend that we're very excited to see. So yeah, the overall numbers are up. And then if you look at the different colors, those are just different size groups of walleyes. So the the small light color on the bottom, that's the 10 to 15 inch fish. The really exciting thing to see is kind of that middle bracket. That's that gray bar. That's the 15 to 20 inch fish. That's really the bread and butter of any walleye fishery. That's where our anglers are really utilizing those fish. That's kind of the preferred size. The black bar, those are greater than 20 inch fish, which big fish are really important to the system. But when you talk about harvest, we do have a 1/20 limit, so not as many of those fish are getting harvested and utilized, but they are provide some opportunity. But really big uptick in that 15 to 20 inch group, which is promising to see. Just to point out, there was a little bit of a decline in those 10 to 15 inch fish, but that's when we took a deeper look into this, that's not something to be concerned about. And I'll kind of loop back to this and explain why after we talk about walleye growth. So kind of switching gears now from kind of the abundance or number of walleyes out there, another metric that we look at is how fast do these fish grow? Obviously, the quicker we can get a walleye to grow to a harvestable size is a great benefit for the fishery. So typically when we look at walleye growth, we look at how quickly or what size do those fish get to at age 3 of life. And generally at age 3, if we can get a 15-inch walleye, that's considered pretty good growth. That's something we'd really be happy with. And actually this last year on the lower end of Lake Waihe, you can see our age 3 walleyes were almost hitting 17 inches already. So that's a really phenomenal growth. I mean, it's kind of crazy to think about when you think about a juvenile walleye that's tiny, a half an inch, and then in 3 years it's going to this big, plump 17-inch fish. That's really, really fantastic to see, something we're really excited about. So this graph here is again just kind of looking at growth, and there's a lot going on here, but I just want to put this on here because it'll help explain why we aren't seeing those smaller 10 to 15 inch fish in our gill nets, and it kind of loops back to the growth. So what this is looking at here is this: you have your age going from left to right, so 1 through 7, and then as the graph goes up, that's longer in size. So what this curve is looking at is basically how quickly those fish are growing. So the steeper the curve means the fish are growing faster. And then eventually, once they get older, that growth slows and they kind of just start to stall out a little bit, which is natural. What's kind of crazy to see is at age 1, we already have about 12-inch walleyes. And then we're hitting 15 inches at age 2. Where if we remember, we just talked about if we could hit 15 inches at age 3, we'd be happy with that. So we're a full year ahead. And then look into age 3, 17 inches, 18 inches, and so on. But basically, what that means here is really any walleyes under 10 inches are too small to catch in our gill nets. So we're not surprised that we don't see any of those. But what we're seeing on the lower end is our fish are growing so quickly is that they're not spending a whole lot of time in that 10 to 15 inch range. They're maybe only spending a year in that 5-inch range. So there's just not a whole lot of fish out there at that size for us to catch, whereas they're growing really quickly into that 15 to 20 inch range and then spending a few more years in there. So that just kind of makes sense on if you could just look at this and see, oh no, we don't have a whole lot of small fish, but it actually makes sense. They're just growing really quickly through these different size bins. Another thing that we look at is walleye condition. This is just kind of how plump the fish is. We hear from the anglers all the time, like the fish look really fat or not fat. This is just kind of an index or assign the value to actually how good a condition those fish are. This goes back quite a ways, all the way back to the 90s. So 2025 is on the far right. I kind of put a box around there between the 80 to 90 value range. That's what's considered good condition for walleyes. And for the last handful of years, we've been right in the middle to the upper end of that good zone. So everything's looking really well conditioned. It is kind of interesting to look back at this graph. So if you can, starting from the left, it's a high peaks and then a big crash. That big crash came right after the big flood of 1997 when the Prey collapsed. And then we saw the walleye condition really go in the tanker after that. So looking at, and then again, moving to the right, things rebounded. And then you can see the same crash kind of in 2011. So we keep a close eye on this walleye condition because it can be a good indicator on how the walleye population is responding to those different prey collapses and stuff like that. Hopefully we never get in a situation like that again, but So now we'll go through a lot of the very similar stuff, but now we're switching to that upper end of Lake Oahe. So the Highway 212 bridge up to the North Dakota, South Dakota line. So again, this graph is looking at the average number of walleyes per net on the upper end. The scales are the same, so you can kind of compare if you remember what the lower end looked like. We do have slightly lower walleye abundance on the upper end, but if you look at those last 3 years, it's definitely been an improvement from where we were for quite a while. Generally, overall, all numbers of walleyes are going up, but really, the interesting thing here is looking at that middle bar, the 15 to 20 inch fish. That is a pretty substantial increase from 17 through 22. So maybe not quite where we want to see walleye abundance on the upper end, but it definitely seems to be trending in the right direction. And we'll talk about some things that we're going to be doing to try to keep that going in the right direction. Again, looking at walleye growth, not quite as good, lagging a little bit behind from the lower end. But again, if you remember, I said at age three, if we can hit 15 inches, that's pretty good growth. And actually this last year, we were right at 15 inches for the first time in a long time on the upper end, which is really fantastic. See, things have really been trending in the right direction the last handful of years. And you don't have to go back too many years, just a handful of years ago to 2022, we were only hitting just under 12 inches at age three, which is a little concerning. And so things have definitely turned the corner and looking in the right direction. This is again just looking at walleye condition. Won't go through this too much, but on the far right, that'd be 2025, and you can see the condition for all three of those different size classes are right in that upper end of that good range. So everything's looking good walleye condition wise, even if they're not growing quite as quickly. So just a quick little summary of what we've done as far as walleye stockings the last handful of years. I've presented this to you all before, so I think we have kind of established that we've moved to alternate stocking. We stock every year on Lake Oahe, but 1 year we'll stock the lower end, the next year we'll stock the upper end. The reason for that being is typically it's not a good idea to stock the same locations with large numbers of fish every year. If you can actually get too many big year classes of fish on top of each other, and then that growth starts to decline, condition starts to decline. So we want as many walleyes out there as possible, but we try to kind of alternate where we're stocking each year. So kind of going back to 2021 is roughly when we started these alternate year stockings. And you can kind of see we've stocked anywhere from about 2.5 to 3.5 million fingerlings every year, somewhere around there, with about 3.5 million fingerlings stocked this past year in 2025, all on the upper end of Lake Oahe. So again, in 2026, the plan will be to stock the lower end of Lake Oahe. I didn't put a specific number up there right now because just based on the time of year we are, we're still kind of in the process of submitting stocking requests. So when you talk about stocking, it is on a statewide basis. So us fisheries managers stock or submit our stocking request, but then those ultimately go to admin where they prioritize those stockings, see how they fit into our hatchery capabilities, and then prioritize and kind of execute those stockings from there. So we're not exactly sure where we're going to be at yet, but our hatcheries have been phenomenal the last few years. They've actually exceeded our stocking requests. So I'm pretty confident we're going to have a very similar 2.5, probably 3.5 million fingerling stocking in 26 on the lower end. Just a little closer look at specifically 2025. So again, we stocked roughly 3.5 million fingerlings, and you can just see those locations stocked there. I won't go through them each individually. Maybe one to point out is that very north one, West Pollock, you'll see that number is a little lower. That one was just, it kind of highlights that Lake Oahe is an interstate reservoir managed with North Dakota. So we work very often with our counterparts up in North Dakota in the Bismarck office. And what they're seeing on the North Dakota portion of Lake Oahe is they have a lot of walleyes out there, but they're growing very slowly. They're in kind of poor condition. So we're fortunate we're seeing something a little bit different, but those folks up there were a little nervous about us stocking a lot of fish right near the North Dakota border where those fish would likely go back and forth and whatnot. So just to help appease them a little bit, we transitioned a few of those fish away from the state line and a little farther south. But so moving over to gizzard shad stocking. So again, we've We've talked about this before, so hopefully you all are a little familiar with this. But when we talk about shad stockings, this is basically trying to get prey fish into Lake Oahe. Excuse me. But when we do this, we're not actually stocking small fish. We're stocking adult, large adult pre-spawn shad early in the spring during the spawning season. So ideally, when we move them to Lake Oahe, they can actually spawn multiple times throughout the course of the summer. So if we can get those fish moved up to Lake Oahe, they might spawn 4 or 5 times and produce oodles of little shad for prey fish throughout the open water season. So just kind of going back on the same time scale as a walleye. Originally, we started stocking the shad kind of in the same locations that we were stocking walleyes. Like, it made sense, right? Wherever we're putting more fish in, we should try to get a few more prey fish in there too. The last few years, we moved to stocking those fish across the whole lake, because what we kind of realized is that even if we're only stocking walleyes in one spot, it's not a bad thing to get more prey in across the whole system. So we started stocking all up and down Lake Oahe, and we've actually gotten very successful, I guess, with getting our hands on fish. So all these shad are coming from trap and transfer efforts. So it requires us, we go out, we have to catch and collect the fish, load them on trucks and haul them up to Lake Oahe. So it is a pretty time intensive endeavor. And we are kind of at the whims of the conditions on Lake Sharp where the shad are coming from. That's why you see some years we have good numbers and some years we have bad numbers, just to, based on water temps and stuff like that. And our timing, we can get a lot of fish in a short period. But so you can see the numbers that we've done the last few years there, moving a lot of shad. Looking forward to 2026. We're actually going to go back to, the plans are to go back to only stocking the upper end. Again, thinking about that walleye growth, we're seeing such phenomenal growth on the lower end. And I don't have a whole lot of time to talk about it today, but the abundance of walleyes on the lower end is really, really good. Walleye growth is really good, but we're actually seeing lower angler catch rates on the lower end than the upper end, because the fish are in such good condition. I mean, there's so much natural forage out there that why would they bite a plastic little lure when they got a bunch of million shad swimming around? So not that that's a bad thing, but we're pretty comfortable with what we're seeing on the lower end. So we're really going to focus all those efforts for gither shad stocking on the upper end, see if we can bolster that growth up there too. And then I mentioned the numbers just kind of to be determined. We'll move as many shad as we can get our hands on, but until we get out there this coming May on Lake Sharp and start collecting fish, we're kind of just at the mercy of what the weather and water provides. So just again, looking a little closer at what we stocked for shad this past year in 2025, you can see the locations there, all the way up from West Pollock up there near the state line, all the way down to Peoria Flats, just above Oahe Dam. So this is one quick graph just looking at rainbow smelt and cisco abundance. So those are our primary cold water prey fish. We obviously also have a lot of warm water prey fish like shad and drum and young year crappies and stuff like that. But a lot of times our anglers are really interested to see what's going on with the smelt. The smelt, that's what we hear a lot about. So just this is just kind of results from our hydroacoustic survey. It's a survey we do in the month of July. Basically, we just have a souped up sonar system that we go out and drive transects in the middle of the night on Lake Oahe in July. So it gets a little dicey at times, but that's when the it's most effective. But basically, that sonar can actually, it counts each individual fish and can actually give us an approximate length of that fish as we drive over top of it. And it's pretty amazing when you consider we might be driving over thousands or tens of thousands of fish in a small transect, and it can spit out a unique length for each one of those fish. But anyway, then we go out and do a little bit of netting and compare our net data to that hydroacoustic data, and kind of that way we can kind of estimate what species we're seeing on those hydro surveys. But this is just looking at smelt abundance out of those surveys. So you got rainbow smelt abundance on the upper graph and cisco abundance on the lower graph. I did put those red circles up there. They're a little difficult to see, but that just denotes the difference in scale. So you can see the top end of the smelt in 2025 was about at 16. And then the top end of the cisco graph is only about 6. So it's not really apples to apples. The smelt abundance is even higher than what it's portrayed here if you put those on the same scale. But the important thing to note here is that, yeah, smelt abundance looks really good right now. And then we kind of saw that inverse relationship with the Cisco. The Cisco dropped off when the smelt increased. And that's actually kind of to be expected. Prior to the flood of 2011, we didn't have any Cisco in the system. It was smelt driven. But then after the flood, when the smelt collapsed, the Cisco moved in and took their place. And it's kind of to be expected that they have an inverse relationship because the Cisco spawn in the late fall and lay their eggs underneath the ice, and then the smelt come in and spawn in the early spring and actually are really big predators on the Cisco. So that's what we start to see when we have a lot of smelt in the system. They're actually suppressing the Cisco numbers. So it's really good to see the smelt numbers coming up. They're smaller size crayfish, so they're more available for a lot of the different sizes of walleyes. I think that's why we've seen some of that really fantastic growth across the whole lake. Not super concerning about the Cisco numbers. Like I said, it kind of goes cyclical a little bit. Something. Should I do something?
You're still going. We just lost internet.
Oh, well, anyway, luckily you saw it before then. But where we might see a little bit is obviously we've had a really big fish craze, big walleye craze on Lake Oahe the last year. I think what some people don't realize is a lot of that came from the Cisco more so than the smelt. The Cisco are big prey fish, so a big 30-inch walleye only has to eat one Cisco versus maybe a dozen smelt or something like that. So that's just something that we'll monitor going forward. And then the last graph that we, oh, there it's back. The last one that I have here, this is just a quick looking at what we saw as far as angling pressure the last year on Wahi, just during the kind of the primary summer months. But you got upper Wahi on that orange line and then lower Wahi on the lower dashed line. Really just kind of looking at trends here. The interesting thing is you kind of look back to 2020 and 2021. That was kind of the peak of the boom, which we expected. We saw all across the state and the country, really. There's a lot of people out fishing. And then after kind of 21, we saw things decline a little bit. But I've said this a few times. I was pretty comfortable that we were kind of just returning to the longtime normal on Oahu. We lost a few of those people after COVID again, and it kind of just returned to normal. The really nice thing to see is this last year in 2025, and I think it's a testament to the fantastic fishing we have going on right now, is we saw large increases in fishing pressure right up there to what we were seeing as far as fishing pressure during those COVID years. So it'll be interesting to see what next year has to bring, and we're looking forward to it. So I'll throw this summary up here. Won't go through it too much, but kind of that increasing abundance and good abundance on the lower end of Lake Wahi, fantastic growth, good condition. The upper end, we're having an increasing abundance, just a little bit behind where we are in the lower end, but definitely moving in the right direction. Good improving growth that we're going to try to focus on with more of those shad stockings up there. We stocked about 3.5 million fingerling walleyes on the upper end of Lake Wahi in 2025, with plans to stock the lower end in 26. Again, about 2,600 shad lake-wide in 2025. Plans are to stock hopefully that many shad on the upper end of 2026. And then good, strong, increasing rainbow smelt abundance. But then that kind of a little bit of that decreasing Cisco abundance as the smelt increase. And then, like I just mentioned, a really fantastic fishing year with our angler chips, similar kind of during that COVID boom. So that is all I had. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Very good. Any questions, comments from the commission?
Mr. B, so when you stock like an upper Oahe or lower, is there any way to track those fish that you're stocking to see, are they seeking out certain habitat they like to be in? So do they like go from upper to lower?
Yeah, through the chair. Yes and no. That's a little difficult. So when we're talking about stocking those fish anyway, they're such a small size that, I mean, they're quarter inch, half an inch, really small, maybe up to an inch, really small juvenile. So obviously they aren't big enough to do any kind of tagging or anything like that. So looking at immediately where they go after stocking is really difficult. Sometimes what we can do is we'll go back a year or two later and we have different genetic tools or like otolith microchemistry where we can discern if that fish was stocked or not and then go back and do some tracking after that. But kind of immediately after stocking, not so much.
What about survival rate?
Yeah, we looked at that in a few places. On Oahu, we looked at walleye survival, kind of specifically pertaining to predation for bass and adult walleye and stuff like that. Adult walleye will eat a lot of young walleye. But we looked at survival of some of our walleye stockings in kind of that spring Cow Creek, Okoboja Creek on the lower end of Lake Oahu. And survival was really fantastic there. Predation was minimal. There was some walleyes would get eaten, but it was a very negligible amount. But yeah, survival is really good there. Another area that we looked at survival, I mentioned that a handful of years ago, we stocked in whatever year it was, and then we came back 3 years later and collected a bunch of what we assumed were age three fish. They fell in the right size class, and then we could actually age those fish, confirm that they were the correct age, so they had came from that stocking 3 years prior, and then we could do some genetic and microchem testing to actually look at like the origins of where that fish came from, whether based on, without getting into the science too much, based on if that fish came out of the hatchery or if it was a natural lake fish, they could look at the signatures like in that bone and tell us definitively if it was a stocked fish or not. So we look at survival that way sometimes, and that was really good too.
Additional questions from the commission. Dylan, you had mentioned that the catch rate in the lower was kind of surprising. What does the catch rate look like in Upper Oahu?
So looking across catch rates, I got to remember it now. I have it in my presentation that we're giving for the public in next week. But I believe we look at it kind of as like a catch per hour type thing. So we look at, we're out there doing creel interviews, interviewing anglers, asking them what they caught, both what they caught and released, and then measuring their fish and stuff. I think for the upper end, it was like 1.3 walleyes per hour or so, which is a pretty good catch rate when you look across different systems. I think the lower end was about 0.5 walleyes per hour or so. So not a substantial difference, but there's a meaningful difference there that which we really attributed to some of those, the good condition of the fish on the lower end. And we hear that's from some of the our different constituents that we talk to fairly often, some guides and stuff. They're happy. They're not complaining, but they're also complaining a little bit that they're really happy to see all the fish on the system. But then with their fancy sonar and stuff, they can see all the bait and stuff, and they can see fish all over, but they're having a hard time catching them. So it's kind of a catch 22 a little bit, is we want a lot of good, healthy fish out there, but it makes them a little more hard to angle for also.
Additional questions, comments? Secretary.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. What a great presentation, Dale. Great work, and great work to the entire fisheries team that has been working on Lake Oahu. This is exciting information to look at. Question I have is, where do those gizzard shad come from? Can you just explain to the commission where those adult gizzard shad or what body of water we get those gizzard shad from?
Yeah, absolutely. Good, Chair. So currently, we move all those gizzard shad out of Lake Shark, just outside the window here. We collect most of those fish out of the Hippo Lake area, which is by Farm Island, just east of town. So yeah, we are trapping those fish out of one reservoir up into another one. And I'm glad Kevin brought that up, because it is a good point that we've talked about, is especially with the good growth we're seeing now, we've discussed when do we stop stocking shad, or maybe when do we dial it back a little bit, because it is a very costly, time-intensive endeavor for us. And the difficult thing is, it's kind of hard for us to quantify when we move these adult shad up to Lake Oahu. In theory, they produce a bunch of little shad, but then if we go out there a couple months later and see little shad all over the place, we can't really reliably tell, well, is that a natural fish, or was that because we stocked one up there? So it's very difficult to look at Oahu and see how well it's working. There's no negative impacts of it from a Oahu standpoint, but where we talk about Lake Shark, since that's where those fish are coming out of, we collect all this similar information on Lake Shark. So we're definitely watching Lake Shark. If we start to see any declines in walleye abundance or growth or condition on something like that, of that nature on Lake Shark, which may be attributed to us pulling bait out of Lake Shark. Obviously, we don't want to hinder one reservoir for the other, so that might be a cue for us to maybe change things up a little bit. But
Madam Chair, follow-up? Very good. The other question I have, and this one might have to really test your memory, information on other species, bass, how are they doing? How are the northern pike populations doing? Just a high level on Lake Oahu. Then if you could maybe touch on Lake Sharp just real quickly, but I think we should probably do a Lake Sharp presentation in March as well. So
yeah, absolutely.
Good very questions. Interesting information.
Yeah, and we have all the similar stuff already put together for Lake Sharp. So if that's something the commission and admin's interested in, whether it's me giving it or somebody else, I think we'd be happy to do that. As far as smallmouth bass on Lake Oahe, really, really phenomenal as far as numbers anyway. We do have some questions or some things we're looking into as far as size, structure of bass and harvest and stuff like that. That's maybe something that we'll be discussing with you all sometime in this upcoming year. But as far as numbers of bass, especially on the lower end, really phenomenal. We're seeing increasing abundance. Upper end is a little bit different. We don't see a whole lot of bass up there comparatively, but I talked about the difference in like water characteristics between that end. It's generally dirtier, muddier. We don't have that hard rocky substrate that we have on the lower end, which smallmouth attract to. So there is good numbers of bass, but the lower end is definitely the good bass area. We don't have a whole lot of information on northern pike. We don't catch them very effectively in any of our nets or anything like that. So kind of what we hear is more so just anecdotally from anglers during the kind of the spring fishing season. But obviously, as we know, that's really variable based on weather and stuff. So just because folks aren't catching pike in the year, that doesn't necessarily mean they're not pike out there. As far as Lake Sharp, definitely testing my memory. Generally, things are more consistent on Lake Sharp. When we look at walleye growth, we're right at 14.5 to 15.5 inches of growth at age three. So right around that good range. As far as abundance, I think it was just an ever so slight dip from the previous years, but obviously there's some variability around our gill nets too. So just because it goes down a little bit doesn't necessarily mean anything drastic, but yeah, I guess I don't remember anything too specific, but we'd be happy to share that at another meeting.
Absolutely. Thank you. Great work.
Very good, Director. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to make one other comment that Dylan mentioned in his presentation. He was talking about the stocking levels, especially on the upper Oahe and the collaboration with the state of North Dakota. I think that's something that in general, the public doesn't understand how much time and effort we put into working and collaborating with our neighboring states and wildlife and fishery agencies, whether we're talking about fish management, big game management, whatever it might be. There's a lot of collaboration, a lot of relationships built with those sister agencies across that political boundary, because the fish and critters don't have a clue what that boundary is, right? And I think that's just a great testament of the work that our staff does all across the state with all of our neighboring states. And what those things lead to also are helping each other out in the fish world. If we need some additional walleye eggs or salmon eggs or something of that nature, then we have that ability, and we do it every single year where we are trading some of those resources or helping each other out. And it's because of the efforts that go on year round working with those neighboring states and other state wildlife agencies. So I was glad Dylan pointed that out, because it is a key thing that we do year round on all the disciplines of the different natural resources that we manage in the state.
Very good. Thank you for that. See no other comments. Great presentation. Thank you very much. That was great. All right, we're going to move on to